Previously on Quest Laid Plans.
This didn't just happen out of nowhere. Someone invited those things here.
I'm gonna, like, open its mouth and cast Destroy Water on the blood in its stomach.
Wait, before we get rid of all of the blood in there, let me look at it and determine how it's healing. This could help me.
I want to cast Detect Thoughts on her.
Esther, I thought we were all on better terms than that. I know that we've drifted apart a little bit, but...
It's not a little bit. It's been 10 years. Things change.
I would like to mind link with Kit.
Are you as worried about her as I am?
I'm not actually worried about her getting hurt, but I'm worried about her making a stupid decision now. Something could take advantage of her. She could make a deal that she doesn't want to make.
Do you want me to follow her? I can follow her.
I don't want us to split anymore.
We meet back at somewhere in an hour.
Can go back to my brother's house. It's safe, and it's close by, and I don't think anyone would come looking.
While wearing my antler necklace of admonition, I can use my wild shape feature to transform into an avatar of admonition, the two-horned horse.
So you're able to find Porla's office relatively easily. You notice that the desk, the table, is strewn with materials that look like they were left about in a hurry. You see that a couple of them had been obscuring an ID card of some kind. It's of, like, an old man. It's not Porla's ID. It says, Primo Krugnail, and then underneath it says, Head of Maintenance and Grounds. She really wanted me to stay in Hiltpah with this memorial. She really had her heart set on this specific statue and wanting me to be involved in it.
Did she specify how?
No, really. Like, that's why it was weird to me. I was like, well, shit, I'm terrible at art. Like, what am I gonna do?
Should I go talk to Gabriel?
I know how it's supposed to feel when you put your magic into an inanimate object, and it just felt like something was already in there.
And if someone else was doing magic... It's either someone very powerful or someone who was here.
Yeah, you kids, you should probably get out of here. I've been ordered to evacuate everybody. It's kind of a rough situation right now.
We are the rough situation. Hi, can I do a history check to see if I recognize this man?
You remember Primo? Windswip, you take a look at these papers and you have a moment where you start to see some connections forming, and we're going to come back to you. Welcome to Quest Laid Plans, the podcast that asks the question, can an old party learn new tricks? I am your Dungeon Master, Megan Kelleher, and with me are the top five skaters after the short program at the Olympics.
Oh, no.
Hi, I'm Maya S. Ming, and I play Windswept Palm, Air Genasi Gnome, Rune Knight, who has no idea what that meant, so...
Hi, I'm Phil Arevalo. I play Kit Marple, a Water Genasi monk.
That's fine. That's it. You know? Sometimes enough is enough.
That's it. Hi, I'm Jesse B. Kohler, playing a human boy, a golden boy. The Olympics are rigged. The competition has been set from the beginning. It is all lies. You hear it here now. This is evidence that the Olympics are a total conspiracy. Esther Miffian's sorcerer.
Hi everyone, I'm Jamie Hathaway, your Yuzuru Hanyu, aka Aveline Yavri Skywatcher, Kalashtar Circle of Wildfire Druid.
The Nathan Chenzu Jamie's Yuzuru Hanyu, I'm Netamari Vojava, and I play Naraya Windsworn, Halfling Wizard Rogue.
And I would just like to remind everybody that the opinions of these party members in no way reflect on any of the other intellectual properties.
All of it's rigged!
Of this
rigged.
Studio.
Rigged.
All of it's rigged from the beginning!
But you didn't hear me say it, but yes, you did. Okay, so we are going to jump back in, and we're going to come back to Aveline, who is standing in the admonition form
very inconspicuously outside of the main building of the Adventurers Guild. Now, I will say this is a magical world and it's an adventuring guild, so it's not crazy that there would be a magical creature here. It would be, it's a little weird that it's in the form of God. but also it's dark out and admonition, I picture admonition as having like really dark coloration. I think the horns would be fiery, but maybe like a darker colored horse. I don't know anything about horses, so don't at me, horse girls.
As a former horse girl, horses can be black. Horses can be dark brown. Horses can be a lot of things. Horses can have two magical forms and be in the image of God.
That's so inspirational.
Sometimes a horse is just... No, I don't know.
Okay. Yes?
I was trying to make a, like, sometimes a family is just, but then I lost my steam on that one. So, all right, Aveline, you are standing outside. What are you getting up to as you are horsing around out here?
Well, I will say, before you answer that, I will say that Windswip is periodically, I think they're still in range mentally, right?
It's, what is the range? I think it's like 50 feet.
I thought you had to be in sight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You have to be able to see you and be within 70 feet. So we're no longer mind linked, but
okay.
I guess I'm looking up at the second floor. I'm trying to see if any lights are coming on because we don't know if there was a light on already in Paula's office. So I'm just standing there scanning around.
That's a good point. Would the light have been on? Because Winsip has dark vision and also blind sight, so she wouldn't have any problem seeing anything, but would the light have been on?
I don't think the light would have been on.
Okay. She wouldn't have turned it on.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right, yeah, so it's a matter of whether she would have turned it on. So you are, as you are kind of craning your horse neck up to see the second floor of this building, you hear from behind you a voice kind of echoing through the field, the quad, going, "Oh, cool big horse. Hold on, guys, mom and dad, just keep going. I'll catch up with you. There's a cool big horse over here I have to see." And they're like, okay, sweetheart.
Do I recognize this as Cabriel's voice?
Yeah, I think you do. I think you do at this point. I think you know what Cabriel does when he sees a cool animal at this point.
I think it's probably also maybe not the first time that he's been like, "Oh, cool big X," about me as an animal. Like, he's probably been like, cool big horse, or regular horse without the horns.
Yeah.
I think once he gets within 70 feet, I mind link with him, given that it's not active. It's not active with Windswip because she's out of sight.
Oh, shit. You link up with Cabriel's mind and you're met with this feeling of vacuousness. just like a big empty room. Great acoustics, but not a lot in there.
Oh, wow. How are you going to do him like that?
Just heart of gold. With this absolute himbo with a heart of gold.
What do you say?
What's up, Cabriel? It's Aveline. I am horse right now.
Well, Aveline, you're the horse?
Yeah.
Of course you are. You can turn into anything. That's so dope. Listen,
Of course.
Can I come pet you or something?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm going to do that. So, Cabriel comes up to you and starts sort of like petting your mane and is like, "You know, apparently we're supposed to leave campus. I mean, you're probably fine because I feel like you could probably just turn into like an even bigger worm or something if another one came. But, you know, the maintenance guy said we should probably go because, you know, more worms could come. And, you know, I just want you guys to be safe is all. Where's Windswip?"
She's just inside using the bathroom, and then we're gonna go meet up at Nariah's house. We just needed to make a little detour, and she really, really needed the bathroom, so I became horse so that we could get here faster. So she's just inside, you know.
I hear that. Sometimes you gotta go.
Yeah, you know, when you're changing between you know, tiny to giant, that can kind of mess with your stomach. So
squeezes the bladder when you shrink. Yeah.
Wow. There's so much I just didn't even think about. You all have to consider so much. Wow. The world is big. So listen,
man, the world is big.
So I was talking to the others back there, and, like, they seem kind of, like, I don't know. They seem like kind of like they're asking a lot of questions about Porla and like if there was anything weird with her and like all these questions about her and the statue and everything. And like, I didn't really know how to answer because I don't know. But then I don't know. I was telling my mom and dad this and like while we were walking back, and then they kind of reminded me of the way Porla was when she was like living with us. And I thought maybe I should like tell you guys about that, if that was helpful. But like, I don't want to like stir shit. I mean, like, Porla's great. I don't know, maybe this is nothing.
Do I know that Porla was living with Chiron's family at one point? Is this when we were younger, or is this like more recently?
I think that you knew that Porla wrote you one of the letters, right?
Yes, we met up in year 8.
Right?
Number 8.
3 of Cups.
So 3 of Cups is you reunite with one of the party members that you haven't seen in a while. How does it go? What do you talk about? What do you notice about the other person?
I think maybe it would be interesting to reconnect with Porla and be like, hey, I do some healing stuff now. I have a newfound like respect for you as a cleric. Also like religion. Fucking wild, right? How's that going for you? And like, yeah, maybe have a really interesting conversation about like how our respective kind of faith journeys have gone.
So I'll tell you, I think that Porla would probably notice about you that like you seem freer. And I think that would be like the biggest one of just like feeling less tense and like judgy and like nervous. Porla, I think you would notice, seems so like in a practical sense, she like went back and just kind of stayed with the Adventurers Guild and is sort of like in a like a higher up now, like an administrator in that guild, and sort of tells you about like they've been making all sorts of changes, and you don't really catch all of it because she kind of mumbles. But when you guys get around to talking about Chiron, I think you get the feeling that if you two are probably the two that were closest to her, and it seems like you've done a lot healthier job of handling that than Porla has. Like, Porla just like doesn't want to talk about it and gets very upset, and like it's just clear to you that you've kind of done the work in a way that perhaps Porla hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I took a whole year off to go like sit by the sea and be fucked up about it, so
yeah, I think like it's pretty clear that Porla never like let herself do that at all.
Yeah,
and it does catch up with you. So
I think that during that time you would have remembered that Porla grew up in sort of a Axiom faith-based orphanage, and that the reason she joined the Adventurers Guild was because she had kind of aged out of that and needed somewhere to be. And after the final battle, she couldn't go back there, and you knew that Chiron's family had taken her in, and you weren't exactly sure the details. You knew she had been there for a while, and then she wasn't there anymore.
Okay. So knowing that that's not a surprise to me, I think while Cabriel is stroking my mane, which I think in a horse form is plaited in the same way as my regular hair, it's in like a bunch of cool braids, so it's kind of fun to fiddle with. I think I say, I mean, you know, we're only asking questions because we care about her, and it seemed like maybe she was really stressed, and I saw her a couple of years ago, and we talked a little bit about your sister and how things were going, and I think we're all just pretty worried for her, you know? We haven't, obviously none of us have come out of the last 10 years unscathed, but she seems to be, this whole thing with the statue, and I thought it was really cool when you threw the statue into the giant worm to explode it, but she seemed to take that really hard, and I don't think you'd be starting shit to tell me what you remembered. And can I maybe make like a persuasion check? Ooh, that's a 19.
Hell yeah. So yeah, you see Gabriel's features kind of relax, and he's just sort of playing with your braid and is like, this is some dope hairstyle. Yeah, okay, so I guess, what do I remember? So I was like 13 when Chiron died, and at that point Porla didn't have anywhere to go, and she moved in with our family, and kind of lived in Chiron's old room, and it was like, I guess it was nice because, you know, I went from having an older sister to not having an older sister, but I had Porla, and it was really hard, you know, like you lose somebody and it's just a weird time, but, you know, over time, I guess it got, it's not that it gets easier, but it's just, you know, you move on a little bit. And I don't know, Porla, she spent a lot of time at the university. So like we live like kind of near this college, and she just spent a lot of time there. Like, I don't know if she was going there or taking classes or just I don't know, but she just spent a lot of time there, and she was talking all the time about her studies and like, I don't know. I'll just kind of went over my head because I was, you know, I wasn't as smart as I am now. I was a kid, you know, and I just remember that there was this one New Year's that was like maybe she had been there for like, I guess I was, how old was I? I was like 16 because I had just lost my virginity for the second time. So, okay, so yeah, I was 16.
Aveline has so many questions, but they feel very inappropriate to ask. So she just, her tail just kind of flicks really like really dramatically when he says that. Mm-hmm. Yep, you know, that well-known second time that you lose your virginity.
So stuff goes out of my mouth that I need a minute to be like, what did I just say?
So he's like, okay, so yeah, it was, so I guess she had been here for like almost like 3 years or something. And I don't know, I just remember we were like sitting around and we were like, we were all sort of talking about things that had happened that year. And I remember that Porla got really upset because like nobody mentioned Chiron, and it was like, well, yeah, like she wasn't around this year, and we were just talking about like what we did that year, but she ended up getting in this huge fight with my parents, and like I think she like left pretty soon after that. It just felt like, I don't know, I asked my parents like what happened, and they just said that it just felt like everybody else was getting better and Porla was getting worse. So that's what I remember. I didn't see her again for a long time after that, and it was just kind of a weird topic. Like, we never really talked about her. If we did, it was like weird vibes. And then, you know, like 5 years later, she gets in contact with us about her armor, and I think we were all just like, yeah, okay, we all just kind of pretended it didn't happen.
That honestly sounds pretty similar to the what we talked about when I saw her a couple of years ago. Like, we had this whole big conversation about grief and healing and faith and processing stuff. And like, yeah, it seemed like she was still really stuck in that.
Well, I think that's like her jam, right? Mm. Like, you know, like I'm really into music and you're really into like being a horse. And I think Corla's really into death and grieving. And like, I don't know, she always had all these like books around that had like sad titles. And I think that's what she maybe studied, was like dying or like death.
Like funeral care or like necromancy?
I don't know what either of those are.
Do you remember anything about what she maybe talked about when she was talking about her studies at the university? Was it like magic stuff or was it like biology?
He kind of starts laughing and he's like, you know what's weird? I remember like most of the time what she was talking about was really sad. And then like one time I just started laughing so hard because she was talking like in the same serious, like, oh, I'm Porla kind of way. But what she was talking about was like a big old like frog, like a big frog that died. And I was like, what the fuck? What? It was just so random. It was like the funniest thing ever. You should have been there.
Oh God. Oh no.
The long pause.
just my notes right now. Big frog that died, question mark, question mark, question mark.
Yeah. Study death, question mark, question mark. Sad shit, question mark. Big frog, question mark.
Next bullet, you had to be there.
You just had to be there. I'm really enjoying imagining that, like, the way the mind link is working with Cabriel specifically is that it feels like I'm standing in a big, like, empty hall with him, whereas normally maybe it feels more like sitting in a library or a living room, and that we're just kind of, like, standing in an airplane hangar, and then when he says big frog, the image of just, like, a giant frog appears, like, on the other side of the airplane hangar, and it's just really jarring.
And then it's all of a sudden it flops over dead. Yeah. And says that it died. I love this. Anyway, at this point, you hear Cabriel's parents kind of be like, Cabe, are you coming?
Cabe.
Thanks. Anyway, Aveline, great talking to you and petting you. I gotta go catch up with my parents, but I might come see you guys later or something. We'll see. We'll see how my parents are doing. But bye. It was good to see you. Bye.
Bye.
And he kind of like scampers off, which is weird because he's like kind of a jacked, tall, buff man, but he, you know, he scampers. What can you say?
Incredible.
I have to sit down.
Horses
don't sit down. But given that Aveline is magical, I sit. I just fully seated like how a dog will sit, but I'm a horse.
I was picturing like crisscross applesauce.
Hey, listen, who's to say that, like, a druid in wild shape can't change the arrangement of tendons in a horse's legs to be able to sit cross-legged?
Seems legit to me.
If anyone can. At this point, we are going to zoom back up slightly and check in on Windswip. Windswip, you have discovered some papers, and what you saw set your mind spinning. All of a sudden it felt like things were clicking into place, but also creating a lot more questions at the same time. So you rolled, I believe, a dirty 20.
I did. Yep.
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you what you see.
It's like those gifts with like algebraic formulas just like swooping in towards her.
I was literally thinking that and trying so hard not to say it.
Math dog gift.
Because I'm like, I am a DM and surely I can paint a word picture without referencing memes. Surely. But sometimes.
It's legit.
Well, I'm a player and I have no shame, so.
Good. No, you're allowed. So, Windswip, here's what you see.
So many pictures of frogs.
You see a frog. Book about frogs.
So many frogs.
No, you
you open a drawer, it's full of the corpses of frogs.
No, you see a bunch of paper. A lot of the loose paper that's lying around is lined paper, like notebook paper. It looks like it's been torn out and very carefully so it doesn't have any of the fringe on it. It's very much on the perforated line. And you recognize Porla's handwriting. You remember it, if for no other reason than having read the letter that she wrote to you so many times over the years. It's not quite as neat and formal as it was in that letter. It looks a little harried. And you see the first piece of paper has the following scrawled on it.
This is where I should start taking notes.
You see the following scrawled in increasingly erratic writing. The death and rebirth of a world is a free-for-all for the gods, and the winner takes it all. But no one has lost more times than me, and I'm still here, waiting. You write songs about me. You paint crude likenesses of me on the walls of your caves. You design great wonders from my bones. You cannot kill me. If it was possible to do that, I would already be gone. And if death cannot touch me, then nothing can. I have been known by many names, and a name is such a thin, fragile thing after all. And then you see a word written underneath. It's Quaris, Q-U-A-R-I-S. And it's just sort of like underlined and circled a bunch of times at the bottom. It doesn't look like it's necessarily like part of the previous paragraph. It's like a separate thing, like diagonally scrawled, very large.
Why did I think it was going to be signed My Chemical Romance?
It's track one. Track one of many.
Also,
Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler.
No, Gerard
it's
Way.
Like a New York
I'm sorry.
Gerard Way.
Butler?
Gerard Way.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
With Gerard Way.
So some things did not survive the apocalypse, and that's many Gerards who are important.
My roommate,
Gerard Way and Gerard Butler, kind of
That is so offensive to me as a person who hates Gerard Butler but loves MCR.
The side effect of that, though, is that Gerard Way was in Phantom of the Opera in this universe. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Gerard Way could do Phantom of the Opera, but Gerard Butler couldn't do Thank You for the Magic Black Parade.
No question.
That's legit. That's 100% correct. Came out. And also, Megan, when you said increasingly erratic writing, I heard increasingly erotic writing. And I was confused for a second.
Oh, yeah. It's really for sexy soggy. Cursive. It's in like a fountain pen, and you can just...
We took that in different directions. Okay.
So we're all coping with this lore dump in vastly different ways.
Sometimes you need to take it in pieces. So you have that piece of paper. You see a bunch of notebooks and folders and books. And the books are all, they don't look like the kind of books you would own. The ones out on the table anyway. They are like laminated the way that library books are. And as you flip through them, you see that they're all stamped with property of Lasper University. So it seems like a lot of the stuff belonged to that university or something.
Is that the university where Porlo attended?
Where she studied sad shit.
Neurocare and or necromancy.
You're not sure what that university was called, honestly. Okay. There are a few, and like it's just hard to keep track of what's where when you didn't like go to one of them. So the Dirty 20 goes for everything. The books, as you flip through them, are predominantly... A lot of them are in languages that you don't really recognize. You think they're probably all, a lot of them anyway, are old world languages, like pre-Great Waking, pre-apocalypse. You see illustrations, you see lists of things that you recognize as spell ingredient, like not, what is the word I'm looking for? Like not recipes, but like spell scroll instructions, components, things like that. One particular book that you look at appears to have several dog-eared pages. And the dog-eared pages, from what you can make out, it appears that they have a lot of ingredients that involve blood, that involve consecrated relics, and you see a lot of kind of like nested instructions, like sidebar graphics within pages, and you get the feeling that these are kind of multi-level complex spells where you're doing a spell to create a component that you then use in another spell.
Why does she have all this here? Who the hell is Quaris? Oh man, Windswip is disturbed. Obviously, this is not what she thought she was gonna get when she quickly skimmed over these, and now she feels like she has stumbled into something way deeper than she meant to, but I think she's going to look out the window and see if she can see Aveline down below.
Yeah, you see Aveline down below getting petted by Cabriel.
Oh, okay. All right, so she backs off because Cabriel's there and doesn't want to get Aveline's attention at that moment. And she really struggles with herself here. I think she's afraid of bringing any of this out of the office. I think she's still scared about Porla finding out that a thief has made off with her important documents and whatever might happen there. So I think she's going to try to memorize as much as she can. And I don't know if you want me to make a roll for that or just like narratively say that she, how much she might memorize, but she tries to just kind of like take a mental picture of these ingredients and this archaic poem or ritual or chant or whatever it is.
Is it the kind of thing where, I mean, because I feel like it would be not to like put actions or words in your mouth, but like there's enough like office supplies around that if you wanted to like copy something, you could, if that was easier.
Okay, yeah, or that. That seems like a simpler solution, actually. Yep. Yeah.
Standing there, like, staring really hard at this, like, erratic handwriting, and then you realize that there's, like, just a big block of, not printer paper, because we don't have printers, I guess, but just a big stack of paper and pencils, and you're like, oh.
You can just write this out.
God,
it's definitely...
The written word exists. I'll say, yeah, you look around a little bit, and you find, you know, a writing implement and some paper, and... You give me a perception check again. Just one more.
16.
You, as you sort of are going through the shelves and everything, it's not too hard to find pencils and paper because everything is very well organized, but you do notice you're sort of thumbing through various boxes and stuff. And you find the pencils and paper in a shelf where you can't help but notice that all of the books are a little bit different than the ones that you had seen on the table and that you had seen elsewhere in the office as you were kind of rifling around. And you, Windswip, have this weird moment where you think back to excavating old sites with your mom and her crew and sort of digging around and trying to find pre-apocalypse things. And you remember this specific day when it was otherwise kind of normal and you hadn't really been finding much. And then your mom ran up to you and was like, "This is incredible, Windswip, come here, look at this. This is, oh my goodness." And she beckons you over, and what you see is this, it's cracked in half, but she's kind of holding it together, and you see this, like, it's about the size of, well, you're very small. She's larger than you, so it's like a little bigger than her hand, but you see it looks like a weird footprint in hard mud. And she's like, "Windswip, did they ever teach you in school about dinosaurs?"
Are those, okay, yeah, I think so. They're like big birds, big old birds.
Some of them were big birds. Yeah, that's true. Probably not this one, but
okay.
Yeah, I mean, they were around and gone before the people before us were around and gone. This is unfathomably old, Windswip. I cannot believe this is still intact. This is wild. And as you remember this, Windswip, back in the present, you realize that a lot of these books are about, like, prehistoric creatures, and you recognize, like, dinosaur footprints that look like the ones you saw back then, and you see a bunch of illustrations of these, like, massive creatures. Some of them are skeletons, some of them have skin, some of them have feathers. It's just kind of a weird little, like, nook in the... And then you find the paper and pencils.
Okay, yeah. She's gonna make notes of all of this, and maybe not directly copy every single word from every single paper, but certainly the highlights of everything, the words that she thinks is most important. And then, yeah, at the end, just a big question mark around ancient dinosaurs, and kind of circles that and connects it back to, like, there was a mention of bones in that creepy poem. And again, just more question marks. Like, she's just kind of grasping at everything here, just like, what could it all mean? Does it all connected, or is it just like a part of her is also like, maybe Porla's just sort of developed passing interest in ancient history, like prehistoric history. That would be cool.
What a quaint hyperfixation of my friend.
Just still holding out hope that, like, not all of this has to be really creepy and disturbing. And yeah, just sort of scrambles to do that. And as soon as she feels like she has the most important stuff down on paper, she just stuffs it in her armor and then hurries out of the office. She'll kind of, like, open the door very slowly and just, like, quickly glance around to make sure no one's watching her.
Okay, great. You make it out of the office and you find your way back to Aveline, who is once again alone.
Sitting in a way that a horse sitting should down. Not be sitting.
Yeah. Yes, sitting in a way that a horse shouldn't be sitting.
Winston runs up, got, like, some papers, and notices that, and is like, Aveline, are you okay? I saw you with Gabriel. Did he do something to your back legs? Are you, like, hurt?
I reestablished.
I have a lot to tell you, but I want to make sure you're okay.
Oh, leg's fine. I just need it to sit down. Yeah, Gabriel told me some stuff about Paula, that it kind of ties in with some of what I already knew. And yeah, it's a lot. What did you find out? Was she there?
No, she wasn't there. And I want to circle back to what you were talking to Gabriel about. But first, and then I think she just opens her brain and just, like, mentally shows Aveline everything that she had just, like, just slams her with. There's this poem and this list of ingredients and these books and all that, and, you know, just sort of catches her up as quickly as possible. and, you know, kind of also rustling the papers, like, I wrote it down for the others, but now it occurs to me that now that you know, you can probably just share it with everyone mentally when we catch up with them, but I'm really, really worried, Aveline. This is not good. She really did want that blood, didn't she?
I'm really glad I was already sitting down for that. I need to sit down again. I think
front legs go down.
I think front legs go down,
and you're like a horse loaf.
I stand up and then I like sit down again with emphasis.
This time with feeling.
Yeah.
At this point, I think I'm going to just sort of ask you what the two of you want to do next.
I think Winston would suggest hurrying to catch up with the others at Nariah's brother's house.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably been enough time now. And also, I would relay to Winswip that Cabriel said that a maintenance guy said that everyone needs to evacuate. So it would maybe be more difficult to... I think we had talked before about maybe going and trying to check the fence. And it sounds like maybe the maintenance people are already on fence duty. So as worried as we are about Paula, I think now we're worried about Paula in a different way. We're worried about her rather than worried for her. And it would be good to get some other eyes and ears on this stuff.
Yeah, I think.
And talk in private sooner rather than later.
But Winswip does also want to talk to Aveline on the way over a little more privately.
Okay, great. So as you're galloping through the streets, the cobblestone, the streets back to Nariah's brother's house, you guys have a chance to catch up a little more.
Would you have shared what Cabriel said?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that kind of what Cabriel was talking about is also what I telepathically talked to Kit about, Paula not really having grieved. And I think that this kind of is more evidence to the pile of like, Paula's not doing so great. And now we have... some more worrying evidence towards some bad magic, because we don't know a lot about necromancy as like a school of magic, but we do know that it is a thing within the world, right?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think that the way that we, the players, think about mysticism, like, you know, like tarot and witchcraft, and, you know, it's the kind of thing that like some people are really into and some people don't believe in, but it's not mainstream science. It's kind of like that, but to magic. It's not that it couldn't exist. It could, but like there's just no proof. So it's like a matter of some people being more into it than others.
Okay, so receiving all this, Winswip and Aveline, you'll kind of feel her emotions in real time, and you feel her worry, her concern, and you also feel a little bit of guilt. And she says to you in the mind link, Aveline, do you remember there was a letter I wrote to you several years ago? And I think I talked about some stuff that maybe I shouldn't have said at that point. But I think I was still reeling and processing, and I didn't know how to talk about it, or who was appropriate to talk about it to, but do you remember how Paula and Chiron were in love together and dating, and no one else was supposed to know at the time that they were doing that?
Okay, Seven of Swords for year 3. Seven of Swords. Your character betrays someone. Why? What happens?
My goodness. She's still mostly on her own. It would have to be either her mom, or I'm thinking like a more low-level betrayal. Like she exposes the secret of one of the party members to another party member. Would that count as like a betrayal?
Yes. I love that. I love this injection of drama.
I obviously don't know what such a secret would be, but...
I can tell you a secret that would make sense to me.
Okay. If you want to get real with it.
Yeah, which would be that Paula in her letter to you, I don't think she got super specific, but I think that she said something that made you think that she and Chiron had their own weird dynamic going on. Like, were they dating or sleeping together, or just, like, had a weird close friendship? Like, Paula said something like, we were closer than you maybe realized, or I don't know, something like that, where you weren't given a specific thing, but... there was tea there.
That's an awesome secret. I love that. Would she have said that to maybe somebody who
I'm trying to think of, like, who it would make sense for you to have run into at any point. I don't know if anybody else is around at this point. It's less of a faux pas than more of a, wow, you really didn't, like, proofread this or get anyone to edit this. This should have stayed in the drafts kind of letter. She could actually, like, have written a letter to somebody and included that in there. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, then in that case, like, anybody that you think you would have confided in. Yeah. Was there anyone, like, that, like, talked about being particularly close to Porla or Chiron yet? Aveline, I think, was really close with Chiron. Okay. And we'll say that she exposes that secret to Aveline through a letter, through a thoughtless letter. Love all this drama that's happening.
That makes a lot of
probably
sense.
Probably if it was in a letter, then probably Windswift, like, made it... Like, so she took the interpretation from Porla's letter, and it's been percolating in her head, in the back of her head, for a couple of years. She's probably misremembering what the original text was at this point, and so she's probably just like, yeah, they were totally, like, in love, and, you know, like, has really, like, made it to be, like, a bigger thing in her misremembering of it as she's writing to Aveline. All right, I'll tell Jamie that that is something that Aveline now also has.
What if all of this is just... All of this is just to bring Chiron back? What if it's just an obsession? It sounds like it's an obsession, and but what... How... It just seems like there's so many darker things that could happen that she believes would happen just to bring Chiron back.
It does seem like... an obsession, and there's a lot of weird stuff going on. We've got the blood, how distressed she was about the statue, knowing that the statue had some of Chiron's real armor in it, and now these notes about if death cannot touch me, then nothing can, and the death and rebirth of the world is a free-for-all for the gods, and all of this stuff about, like, blood and consecrated relics. Honestly, since we saw her again, I haven't been... Since I saw her again 2 years ago and continuing now, I haven't been filled with optimism about her mental state. And, like, I know we all loved Chiron. I think maybe I felt about her a little bit closer to the way Paula feels about her, but I spent a year... doing nothing except feeling my feelings and sitting in that, and feels like maybe instead of accepting that death is a natural part of life and some things just can't ever be, and, you know, that druid stuff, sometimes you need the fire to scorch things so that new, better things can grow, that maybe, yeah, Paula has kind of thrown herself into the idea that somehow Chiron can be brought back.
At this point, you guys arrive at the house. I think even in real time, it probably, that's like about the length of the commute. It's not too far away from campus. And before long, in this incredibly distressing conversation, you find yourselves past the bakery green door and at the door of Nariah's home, where you see the lights on. Nariah, Kit, Esther, and Brex have already arrived back safely. Nariah, I'm going to ask you now, to describe, I guess, sort of more in depth what the house looks like, and maybe, like, if there's, like, a living room that you're all hanging out in, or, like, what's the first thing that you do as the host when your friends arrive?
Yeah, okay. So, first of all, my brother's name is Tefan. It's T-E-F-A-N. It's like Stefan without the S. All of y'all would know that because he... very much was like the cool older brother when we were like teens. And his house, you walk into, there is no like hallway or anything. You walk into this living room space and it's very like cabin-like. It's very wooden and dark, but not dark in like a deep mystical way. It's just like dark wooden furniture and wooden slates on the walls and all of that, but it's very cozy. It's lived in and nice. He's kind of lived there since he first like
started living on his own. He's a ranger, so there's like ranger shit around, like bows and arrows and knives and stuff. And the first thing I do, just the second we walk in, is I put on just a massive kettle of tea. And also maybe raid his liquor cabinet. If anyone's down, Esther's down, so Esther's we are doing that.
Nariah, you know what's really great at times like these is some hot sake.
Ooh, oh my God,
you fucking suck.
No. Is this where the girls walk in?
Yeah, absolutely. They get there not too far after you. So, quick question about the house. Is it more like one of those big open plan cabins where like it's all like the kitchens and one, you know, or is it like small little rooms?
I think there's like the living room space and the kitchen are one, but then there's just like it branches off.
Yeah, like I think we had established that bedrooms are upstairs.
Yeah, there's like bedrooms upstairs and a bathroom maybe and other rooms, but there's like this big space where you can like kind of walk around. I'm imagining it like L-shaped, so you like walk in and it's the living room and then like you turn a little corner and you're in the kitchen, but you can still be a part of the conversation.
I love that. I am obsessed with cabins, and so I'm just like indulging my fucking cabin core fantasy by making you tell me about this house. So
I have such a clear image of this house in my head.
Good.
It's very, very clear to me.
I'm glad.
Teffin's cabin looks like
you have to,
very
Nettie,
good.
You have to draw a floor plan, and then
I was
we will
say, floor plan when
put this up on the Patreon. $50 a month tier, you get Nettie's wow. floor plans oh. for all of the buildings in the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautiful. God, no. I'll make them an Animal Crossing. It'll
a
be great.
A mood board of cabin decor.
I was thinking I will probably do a mood board. So anyway.
Yeah. So anyway, this is, yes. So the hot sake is the cue for Aveline and Windswip to enter. Aveline, this is a home that belongs to a man who is presumably rather small, and you are a horse.
Yeah, my brother is very much also a halfling. We are blood related.
I was thinking that probably, like, it seems likely that when we arrived at the front door, I would stop being a horse, just because stairs seems a little bit difficult. So, and I can only mind link with one person at once, so being able to actually speak with my human voice might be easier. So I think I am probably no longer horse at this point.
What does it look like when you turn back into a human?
Winslet is still on her shoulders.
It's like a chicken fight.
I probably ask Windswip to dismount so she doesn't fall to the ground from like a significant height. It's kind of a similar thing to the initial transformation that I kind of, the antlers, the horns kind of glow fiery and I kind of burn up. I imagine that if turning from a human into an animal is like fiery, that turning from an animal back into a human is more like a kind of extinguishing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That it kind of like glows like the way embers do when a fire is dying and there's kind of a little sort of smoky stuff and I kind of shrink back
down.
Yeah,
you see like magical bits of like ash and embers just sort of flying and dissipating into the night as you turn back into a humanoid person and the two of you, I'm assuming, enter the home.
And I take my antler necklace back off my head and put it around my neck again.
Now, I am going to butt in here and be a DM and do a little bit of housekeeping stuff. So I'm going to say, I think at this point, rather than have everybody role play through information swapping, I'm going to just say that you all exchange the information that you have. We're also going to take a rest. And you don't have to be sleeping during it. I'm going to assume, I'm kind of fudging it a little bit and making it like a medium rest, where it's not like 8 hours of sleep, but because you leveled up and everything, I'm going to say that you get restored back to full and assume that it's, you know, a good chunk of hours over which time you are hanging out and exchanging information. And I'll ask you guys also what you guys want to do during this downtime, but that's sort of what's coming up. And I just, for time's sake, we don't need to role play through like the exchange of information unless there's anything really specific you want to hit on.
As a medium rest, are we doing like short rest, we have to roll hit dice, or are we just going to be back up to full?
I think that it's going to be back up to full. Okay. I think God it's going to be treat it like a long rest.
Okay. It's a long rest, but we're vibing rather than sleeping.
Yeah, it's a long rest, but you're vibing rather than sleeping, and it's probably not a full 8 hours, and I am allowed to do that because it's my show.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. And spell slots, too.
Yep, everything.
Everything.
Oh.
Ooh, do people who have to choose and prepare spells get to choose and prepare new spells?
I'm going to say yes, but that would be, like, your activity that you do during downtime.
Shite.
Like, I mean, I think talking and having conversations is free, and then you're going to get, like, an extra thing. So, like, Windswip's probably going to have to, like, do physio or something, and everybody else is going to, like, do whatever. And I think if you want to change out
yeah,
your spells,
I mean, realistically, thing. If we've been exchanging all of this information, I'm assuming the casters among us might be wanting to, like, prepare for a morning where we may or may not need to do more shit.
Yeah. I'm picturing everybody on the floor with their binders, pulling their cards out, trading them, swapping them around. It's like a full Pokemon meet.
Yes.
At this point, we are all in one place again. We're going to do the following. First of all, I told you guys to level up from level 5 to level 7 at this point. Two levels at once make sense for me based on both the pacing and length of this arc and also the fact that I think when you're regaining old skills, they come back a little faster than if you're learning them the first time. So that being said, I think it would be fun if we all went around and said what goodies we picked up between 5 and 7. Standard order. I guess we'll start with Maya and work our way around.
Sure, yeah. So, Windswip is tankier, but also I went with the ASI to increase her strength and intelligence. Mm-hmm. So she's now at +4 strength and +3 intelligence. She's still very low wisdom and charisma, though, in case anyone was picking up on that. And she also gets a goodie called... Oh, she gets a couple of class features. So her runes, which give her certain abilities, she added one. I picked the storm rune, which kind of connected to her mother as a divination wizard. This one kind of gives, like, a sort of slightly prophetic power in that she can't be surprised, she gets advantage on arcana checks, and in battle, she can go into, like, a prophetic state for it that allows her to, like, use her reaction to make rolls have advantage for her friends or disadvantage for her enemies. So she can just kind of do that, you know, as a reaction anytime. So just kind of anticipating what's about to happen and helping out.
Netta is full, like, Robert Redford satisfyingly nodding dot gif right now because they are obsessed with anything divination. Because
all of my characters either have portend or have some other feature that lets them fuck with my DM's roles. And I've only stopped doing this to Megan because she knows I would do it. So this is delightful to me.
Yes, and I also had mentioned to Megan specifically that she can't be surprised with this win as long as she has this rune on her.
Must be no fun to watch scary movies.
Yes. No jumps, cannot be jump scared.
I wish I had that.
Windswip has leveled up to horror movie buff.
Yeah, and then the other class feature is that she gets a runic shield, which is another reaction. She has a lot of reaction-based stuff, and this is if a creature in 60 feet of her is hit by an attack, she can use her reaction to make that attacker re-roll and use whatever roll comes up, so chances of potentially nullifying attacks in a sort of runic shield that may show up. So lots of fun stuff. Looking forward to using maybe some of them.
Amazing. Kit, what's new in Marple of Town?
Yeah, Marple of Town. So I think Kit figured out in that battle, he was starting to remember some of his old tricks. So he's a little bit faster now. So I think his speed has increased. He now has key empowered strikes. Good monk feature, so my unarmed strikes are now magical, which is great. And Kit is a Kensei monk, so that's Wei that specializes in weapons. And he gets to specify another weapon as a Kensei weapon, which is his whip, which he's carried around with him. But you know, during that battle, he didn't use it because he, you know, he wasn't comfortable with it. But I think he's got the whip back now, and that's great. And some other, what's the other big thing? Yeah, and other monk features like evasion, so take less damage on anything that involves a dex save, which is excellent. And yeah, I think that those are the big things. Oh, I guess I also picked up some stuff from some optional monk features from Tasha's, including key fueled attack, which basically lets, if I use key on an action, I can make a weapon attack as a bonus action. And one more thing. Oh yeah, Death Strike, which is, wait, oh, yeah. That's not it.
No. Nope.
Anyway.
Deft or death?
Deft.
Oh.
not Death Strike. That would be that'd be kind of OP.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And I could just kill people just in a single blow.
He has a nuke now.
No, it's not that. It's Focused Aim was the other optional one I got. So I can like spend key points to add to a hit roll.
Cool. You love to see it. Esther, what's new with you?
So yeah, Esther is, I think his connection with his draconic ancestry has gotten a bit stronger in these leveling up of two levels. So Esther is, dragon is the brass dragon, but the gold is, so brass and gold are both fire. That's this like damage type. And I think that Esther's like eyes have just become a slight, like the tint has just like leveled up a little more of that like gold, like it's just like a little more like sparkly, like chromatic. And what that means mechanically is that now at sixth level, I can add my charisma modifier, which is +4 to any fire damage that I do on any of my spells. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. And then I got a handful of more sorcery points to keep those quicken spells going.
Amazing. All right, Aveline.
So druids only get cool shit every other level, but I get a lot of things at those levels. So I now have, I have some more spell slots, and at sixth level, I get a new druid circle feature, which is an enhanced bond with Addy. So now when I cast a spell that deals fire damage or restores hit points while my wildfire spirit is summoned, I get to roll a d8 and add that as a bonus to either the healing or the damage. And it also means that I can now cast spells, if they have a range other than self, I can have them originate either from me or from Addy. So if we were on like different sides of the battlefield, I could originate a spell from her. I get a very bunch cool of stuff at level 8. I get like 4 new things at level 8.
I'll be so cool next time, guys, I promise.
Yeah.
I love the howling dogs. I think I'm going to keep it and like maybe add more howling dogs. Just double down.
It's good
just
flavor.
Just add it in the background as sound effect.
If you want me to just go outside and record howling dogs and like send me the MP3s, you can just layer it in every time I talk. Just really loud howling dogs. Just make it a really difficult audio experience.
It's their leitmotiv.
Just really going to pull method on this character.
All right, Naraya, what'd you get?
So Naraya is, as you know, I have multi-classed. She is a rogue, but also a wizard, and I only leveled up 2 wizard levels. So now she's a 5th level wizard and only 2 levels rogue. So I just basically get some more spells. I get 3rd level spells now, which is fine. I also picked up a feat for my ASIR feat. I now have the second chance feat, which means that when a creature hits me with an attack roll, I can just use my reaction to force them to reroll, and I can use that once before a short rest, or if we roll initiative again for a different thing, I can use it one more time. Which is nice because I'm squishy. And that also let me bump my constitution up by 1. So Naraya is like getting more comfy with doing magic in combat, but also she's extremely aware of how little armor she's wearing while doing that. And she's trying to not die.
That's a good idea. I leveled up
Brax.
Ooh.
And he's like, I Megan, don't... as the DM. I leveled up.
Have leveled up.
Have leveled up.
IRL.
He's better at it now. I don't believe he got an awful lot of stuff.
Everyone at home, please notice that Porla has not leveled up. It's because she is a level 20 necromancer.
I didn't say she didn't level up. I just didn't say she leveled up.
Yeah, yeah. It's because she has leveled up from 18 to 20 and she is now a level 20 necromancer.
Very sus all around.
Brex has a thing that is called bolstering magic.
Ooh.
Cool.
As an action, you can touch one creature or yourself and confer one of the following benefits of your choice to that creature. For 10 minutes, the creature can roll a d3 whenever making an attack roll or ability check and add the number rolled to the d20 roll.
A d3? Is that a thing?
It says 3.
Let me look this up. I'm just curious now. What is a d3?
What are you doing, D&D Beyond?
What? I guess, like,
Rex
you can get
up to find
has
a
leveled
new...
up to a non-Euclidean level.
Yeah. I mean,
just use a d6,
yo,
I guess.
Yo, it is
like...
a d3. And there is people on the internet who are like...
Well, I guess you can roll it online.
I mean, yeah, but like...
Dice are not fun.
I think it probably levels up as Brex levels up. And so like, it becomes a not stupid number eventually. But anyway, you can roll... you could also roll a d3. The creature regains one expended spell slot, the level of which equals the number rolled or lower. Creature's choice. Creature receives benefits. Creature can't receive it again until after long rest. And this can happen 3 times per long rest. And I think that's, like, pretty much it for Rex. And so, yeah. Rex is a helper now.
A D3 is a real thing. They look super weird. They have, like, soft sides.
I don't have one of those, and I...
No, I don't think they're standard.
Now I have to get one. Jeez.
Yeah,
okay,
my
so
massive
sorry,
dice collection feels incomplete now.
Okay, so jumping back into the game, now that we all know how slightly more powerful we are, now that we are feeling our oats, having vanquished some gross mosquitoes and a big worm and a devil... No, not. I guess it wasn't a devil. What was it, like a Grim Reaper? Anyway, it's my world and I forget. That's the title of this show. It's My World and I Forget by Megan Kelleher. So you all find yourselves in Teffin's cabin, which, as Netta let us know, is like this lovely L-shaped kind of open plan area. It's very woody. There is tons of tea. What kind of tea? You got Sleepy Time?
No, it's like a very
did
nice...
Did the Sleepy Time Bear survive the apocalypse?
The Sleepy Time Bear did survive the apocalypse and is a minor deity, but also no...
That's the bear that's the
yeah.
That's the god, isn't yep. The Sleepy Time Bear?
Major
correct.
Cult figure.
Just, no. Yeah, no, I was going to say, this the guy who owns Celestial gives a ton
seasons.
Of money to this cult.
Yep.
He's like the major...
So the bear is called Affirmation, and I do think that checks out with the Sleepy Time,
with Sleepy
like,
Time?
The little on the labels
yeah.
giving
yeah, yeah,
you, like,
yeah.
positive words before you go
soft
to sleep.
Soft affirmations.
The god of that which is, and what is.
Which
is
delicious.
Sleepy.
So, okay, what kind of tea do you have, though, if not that?
It's like a nice herbal blend, but it's very much... It's probably the sort of tea you want to be having in the morning, but Teffin is just kind of feral, so he doesn't believe in Sleepy Time. So we're just having, like, some black and green teas past midnight.
Just full caffeination.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's one way to achieve a rest.
Mm-hmm. I never said he's smart.
Yeah, I want to say Windswip, so you, during your downtime, you have to... dedicate at least a little bit of time to some sort of self-care or else your pain dice goes down in size. So what do you want to do?
Yeah. Well, I was going to... this is stupid. Before all that, you know, as she's catching everyone up to what she and Evelyn had discovered, as she's holding, you know, this green tea in her hand, she just kind of, like, stumbles. She's like, oh, no, I spilled the tea. I just wanted to get that in.
And it landed on a pair of ice skates that were there for some reason. And it was like, oh no, I spilled the tea on figure skating. The extended universe.
Teffin is very much, he's proficient in ice skating.
I enjoy the two genders of Stefan here are the Stefan Lambiel and then Stefan from SNL.
Oh, because Stefan Lambiel and Stefan from SNL are the same.
Yeah, they're
person.
Not different genders.
It's,
they're not
it's
different
the same gender.
Because my brain is just going, this cabin has everything.
yeah. Oh my god.
Sleepy Time tea, accidentally outing your friends. A horse?
Oh, God.
Kill this bit.
Yeah, let's keep doing bits because it's a funny show, but let's get through like what we do.
This is not a comedy show. Everyone fucking focus.
Yes. I've never done a comedy show in my life. So, Windswip.
So, I'm sorry for derailing again, but yeah, Windswip is just doing her stretches, some kind of particularly focused on kind of a leg day type stuff, but light, keeping it light, you know, not actual like lifting weights or anything, but just like lower body type exercises. And, you know, she'll kind of do them in one of the kind of kitty corner rooms that Netta was describing earlier, where she can still like hear part of the conversation that's going on, but is kind of like doesn't want to be in the middle of the room.
You're still able to count
doing yoga or anything.
30 seconds on one side, yeah. 30 seconds on the other.
Yeah.
You find yourself a room where there's, you know, pillows and stuff you can use to prop up whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a nice quiet time and you are able to, it's a good stretch. You find yourself kind of like releasing some soreness. You've done your exercises, so your die gets to stay a d20. And I'm going to say in addition to lore dumping, catching up, resting, everybody else gets to do one thing during this time.
I'm prepping spells.
I am also prepping spells.
So Kit really likes maps. He, throughout the journey, he was like drawing maps of wherever they sort of went and copied any map that he would see of like from the before times. And with all this new information, I think Kit wants to spend some time kind of looking at the maps of their past adventures to see if there's any, I guess, places that might sort of fit in with like this weird frog narrative and where Porla might be drawn to going.
And could I know that Winsip's already doing her one thing, but like whenever she finishes that, could she come over and also help by pointing out the like sites where she had visited with her mom where they had found like the dinosaur stuff?
I'll allow it, yeah. Cool. So I'm going to say, what kind of check do you think this would be? Do you think it would be more focused on history or arcana or...
I think it's more history because it's sort of thinking about the journey that we already took.
Sure. Yeah. Give me a history roll.
And can Winsip give him advantage by also talking about those?
Sure.
So with advantage, that is a 21.
All right. So here's what I'll tell you. You know that the planet that you exist on is much bigger than the area which you have traveled, and you've traveled quite a bit. But it wasn't the kind of adventure where it took you all over the globe. It was, you know, fairly regional, maybe the equivalent of like a medium-sized country to the way we would frame things. When you are looking, you specifically notice that, how do I want to phrase this? The university that had its stamp on the books that Windswip had found in the office, Lasper University, you're able to confirm that it is in the town where Chiron is from. And you had all passed through there at one point during your journeys and sort of met Chiron's family. And that's, you know, Cabriel remembers you from this, right? You remember him being this, like, skinny little preteen kid. And that adventure involved, I think, probably not directly that university, like you weren't on the campus, but you were having to tail and investigate somebody who was an employee of the university. And so you remember like, oh yeah, that's definitely the place. And you remember that person that you were tailing was a powerful witch who was bolstering the dreadnought by taking advantage of the fact that there was something special about this place geographically, and it had a very powerful magical signature to it.
Okay.
So you know that through that adventure, you learned that there are certain places in the world where there's more magic in the air, so to speak. It's not fully known why, but geography matters when you're casting.
Okay. Wow.
And as far as, I think Windswip, your journeys took you a little bit further south, like southwest, and you never found any other dinosaur prints or anything like that in your travels. You really did mostly find relics from like
what we would know as like the 20th, 21st century. So I think that rather than having specific like insights that help Kit, I almost want to say that like just having a second pair of eyes like allows you guys to maybe reminisce a little bit and like talk through some of those memories.
Yeah. So I can imagine it like we're like literally retracing our journey and talking about what we encountered along the way and trying to connect that with everything that's happened in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, totally. All right. Just a good old stroll down memory lane.
Yeah. Not awkward at all.
No, not avoiding eye contact.
It is focused very, very intensely on the map, but the heads are kind of like maybe close together.
Oh, no.
But it's just because you're both trying to share the map.
Yep.
Esther, what are you up to during this time?
There's a bottle of gin that Teffin has had for years that Esther has like eyed and just cause, like idolizing just like that cool older kid. So Esther has gone up to Naraya already holding the bottle and so
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And immediately walks.
Yeah, he won't care.
Esther, yeah. Esther is a bit uncomfortable. It's been a while since he's, like, been around this amount of people. Like, there's a lot of, like, he's just in a point of, like, okay, now I need some time. Like, his version of recharging doesn't occur around other people. So I think he finds somewhere a little hidden away, has some of this gin, and writes out this scripture. This text, and is just really reflecting on it, because I think it's the sort of text that, like, not that it has, he has seen it before, but you know how, like, I don't, like, I feel like a lot of, like, Wall Street, like, bros, or just, like, that finance world, like, uses, you know, like, Prometheus, or, like, these, like, Odysseus things, it's like,
oh god,
you yeah. know, so I feel like he's, like, seen that sort of, like, jargon before, and is just like trying to reflect on that and see if it like stirs up anything.
Is Esther Kendall Roy?
Yeah, I think so.
Love it.
There is definitely Succession vibes coming into this world.
But can he rap?
No. I can't.
So yeah,
I can never be him.
I'm sorry, I can't be him.
So yeah, so I think Esther's doing that, and then a true coincidence, one of the spells that I did, I mean, I'm still a little lost on the, like, a sorcerer just had, like, I just learned, like, I don't have a book that I can go to, like, there's just spells that I now.
Yeah, you just, your soul just knows things.
So, one of the spells that I picked is a fourth level necromancy spell, by coincidence.
Ooh. Talk me through that, actually, because I might veto that, and I feel really bad about okay. it, but it didn't, I didn't know any of you guys were gonna have access to necromancy spells, but basically, in keeping with the fact that necromancy is like less of a developed art in this world, I've been planning on saying like certain spells just don't exist, and some of them do, and it just depends on the spell. So which one is it?
Blight.
Blight's fine. You can use blight.
Great.
Thank fucking goodness. I might also have. I need to go through my spell book, but I might also have some necromancy, and I'll just off mic talk you through it.
My general rule of thumb, if it's helpful, is if it allows you to imbue life to dead things, it doesn't exist, but if it allows you to hurt living things with necromantic energy, then it does exist.
Amazing.
Cool. Revivify?
Nope. There would be no story.
Revivify's hard and expensive. There can still be...
Also, it only works for like a minute after someone has died.
Never mind. Okay, cool.
I think in general, really high level magic has yet to be discovered. You guys reaching, however, whatever level you were at before, what did I have you guys at, like 13 or something?
12.
That's not high on the scale of like level 1 to level 20, but you have to remember that magic is still kind of being explored and discovered in this world. So, I mean, people who are casting at levels that would correspond with higher than maybe 15 or 16 are like legends. Did they even really exist? Has that, anything like that even happened yet?
So. Amazing. Cool.
So I can't stock Revivify.
Correct.
Okay. I will change that for something else.
I'm sorry that I forgot to tell you guys
it's always prepared for me.
Really? Let's talk about that and find something to replace that with.
So I would like to do, if possible, like an insight or history check, like on this poem.
Insight check on that. Sure. Yeah. Give me an insight check.
That is going to be an 18.
Okay. So it's very clear to you that this is Porla writing out someone else's words. It's not Porla like doing a free write. This is just, you can tell with your insight check that this did not come from Porla. This, you don't know how you know, but it was Porla being dictated to.
Mm.
Or copying something that somebody wrote, but not coming from her. Mm-hmm. And you feel like your just first gut instinct when you read it was you assumed that Quaris was like the name, because the end of the poem or whatever you want to call it talks about names. And then there was a word that was like capitalized and you don't know the word, and it just, your brain just said like, that's a name. So you don't know 100% for sure, but you have a strong feeling that this is a name and potentially the name of the person speaking these words, but you're not 100% sure. It's just like a gut feeling that you feel very strongly.
Okay. And then Esther's like, is looking at these words and just kind of like blinks, and his eyes just do like a flash and they go all brass for a second, just fully go, and then it comes back. And that's like Blight has now, you know, become like, he has now gained that ability.
Hell yeah.
That's cool. That's cool.
I would also like you to give me a DC 14 constitution saving throw.
Oh, boy.
Because this djinn was way stronger than you thought.
I got so scared for a second.
I know. I thought I was like, I've read the devil's language.
Yeah.
What is drinking old djinn if not reading the devil's
language?
That's a good euphemism.
Wow.
Don't mind me. I was just reading the devil's language.
I rolled a 19, and I have a +7 to constitution. So.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so you're a tank. Like a you're champion. Like, this is...
Yeah, Esther goes...
This is delicious.
He goes, Kit, I am finally ready for the sake.
You're like, it's like the alcohol version of Lord being like, this is a delicious wine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right, and... Is that everybody or Jamie? Did we not?
I'm preparing spells. Aveline, now at level 7, has access to level 4 spells. So one of the things that she is preparing is locate creature in case we want to try and track Porla down. And also pass without trace in case we need to be stealthy at some point.
I think Aveline and Naraya are just having like floor time, thinking about spells, watching the boys engage in reading the devil's language.
I think we're also
that would be a good line when we write our tavern core bop.
Reading the devil's language.
God, I love tavern bops.
A lot of stomp clap. Hey,
really heavy banjo. I think also Aveline and Naraya haven't really hung out a lot. Like, we didn't really talk at the dinner. So I think while we're having, like, floor spell time, we're just kind of maybe catching up a little bit. I'm asking about Tefan and the apartment and stuff. We're just having a little bit of, catching up.
I think it's very, like, it's so late in the day and we've done so much that it's not, like, any of the, like, heavy, heavy catching up, but we're just, like, falling into this rhythm of just, like, we're doing a thing.
And a little bit, I think, like, talking about the spells, being like, oh, I didn't know you knew, like, this, or, like...
Yeah, because since we last talked, I went to wizard school for wizards!
Yeah, you're not just a rogue anymore, so that's exciting, I think we're
showing off like a wizard
being
shit,
like,
or a spell.
Okay,
shit.
This is what it looks like when I cast like produce flame. Like, what does it look like when you do that?
We burn all of our spell slots before we go to bed.
Yeah.
It's literally just like that book about wizard school by Stephen King.
Yep. the one book with the endless amounts of trans wizards. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, you trans wizards, the book. Stephen King.
I really like to think that Stephen King has like become like Shakespeare, where it's just like he's just yeah. He's the author of all of the books. And we're like, how did he do it?
Yeah, like middle schoolers will just put a quote in their yearbook and attribute it to Stephen King because it just seems.
I
right.
feel like people do that now pre-apocalypse.
Is Stephen
Hosea? Right. The musical version is Hosea.
Hosea really is the Stephen King of music.
Wow. That's so profound.
Wow.
All right, let's move on. So at this point, I'm going to say that as you are doing all these activities, the hours pass, the night ticks down, and, you know, whether or not your character manages to, like, actually find a nice comfy spot and cuddle up or just sort of catch a few winks on the floor, you do find some time to rest and become more refreshed. So everybody is back to full everything and leveled up. And it's one of those things where you don't realize that you've fallen asleep until you wake up and you realize that the sky is a different color, but kind of in a en masse that you don't realize, you don't remember everybody falling asleep. You don't remember everybody kind of nodding off, but you awake to see that the light coming through the windows is light blue, and you see the sunrise starting to, well, yeah, you see the sun like half risen through the east facing windows, and you hear birds chirping, you hear the world outside starting to wake up, and there's always like that one really insistent bird that just won't shut the fuck up, even though you'd like to get a couple hours more sleep. And at first you feel that familiar, oh, that bird, shut up, why is there always a bird? And then you realize that in addition to the cawing and hooting and bird songs, as birds are wont to do, there's also this persistent tapping. It's this clink sound rhythmically. And Naraya, you wake first and feeling sort of the hostly instinct of, I'm embarrassed that this is happening at my home. I want this to be a comfy place. You look out the window and you see a bird repeatedly flying into your window and just hitting it with its beak. It's like ramming itself, and it's also making this sound.
It's one of those windows that slides up to open, so I just slide it up and let it. I slide it up as it's about to hit the window again and just let it come inside. Like, what? What do you want?
Naraya, as you open the window, you expect the bird to fly inside.
Yeah.
What you don't expect is dozens and dozens more birds to follow suit, as in a giant...
Oh, God.
And I need everybody to roll initiative.
Everyone, wake the fuck up! It's the birds! It's the birds like the film that Stephen King wrote!
Stephen King's gonna sue us.
Wow.
I'm never drinking sake again.
Hey, Questies, it's me, Megan. I just wanted to thank you once again so much for listening. And if you like what we're doing here and you want to help us keep doing it, please let your friends know about the show, tweet about us, write about us on Facebook, put a thing in your Slack about us at work, whatever you want to do. Leaving us a great review on whatever podcast platform you listen on helps so much. And if you want to be even more helpful, we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/questlaidplans. And our newest Patreon episode, which should be freshly out when this episode of Quest Laid Plans drops, is another episode of Netta's new show, Pitch a Bitch. And this time I am the guest and I am telling them all about my very first original character, my first OC from when I was like 15 and freshly into Final Fantasy and didn't even know what the word cringe meant. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Check that out. patreon.com/questlaidplans to support us a little bit and get some awesome bonus content that will make you laugh at me, which is the goal. Thank you so much, everybody. Follow us on Twitter @questlaidplans, and we will see you next time.